Good evening, Michael Malice here. Welcome to Nightshade, that science project experiment thing for you to share with your family. Our top story tonight, I've been making jokes about this for years. Jokes. It's in my book. And now it's been revealed as true. According to the Daily Mail, British paper, Ken Starr purposefully left out the finding that Hillary Clinton had triggered the suicide of President Clinton's deputy White House counsel in his final FBI report in order to spare her feelings. FBI agents investigating the death of Vince Foster learned he was set off after Hillary attacked and humiliated him in front of other White House aides a week before he took his own life. Oh, Ken. On July 20th, 1993. For what were then unexplained reasons, Starr chose to conceal the FBI's finding, the FBI, that Hillary's tirade had triggered Foster's suicide when he wrote his final report on the matter. I am not trolling you. At a reception for authors participating in the 2019 Annapolis Book Festival last weekend, Starr was asked why he omitted the damaging FBI finding. At first, he beat around the bush, citing well-established facts indicating that Foster was already depressed before she lashed into him at the White House meeting. But when pressed, Starr admitted that he told that he did not want to inflict, quote, further pain on Hillary by revealing that the humiliation of Foster a week before he took his own life pushed him over the edge. In interviews for the book, The First Family Detail, about the Secret Service, the FBI agents who worked the case for Starr revealed the truth about Foster's death when he shot himself at Fort Marcy Park along the Potomac River. The investigation into his death was conducted for independent counsel Ken Starr's probe of the Clintons' investments in the Whitewater real estate development. And now, in interviewing Clinton White House aides and Foster's friends and family, the FBI agents found that a week before his death, Hillary Clinton, as First Lady, had a meeting at the White House with Foster and other top aides to discuss her proposed health care legislation. Hillary violently disagreed with a legal objection Foster raised at the meeting, ridiculed him in front of his peers. That doesn't sound like her. According to two former FBI agents, this is according to author Ron Kessler. Copeland was Starr's senior investigator and read the reports of other agents working for Starr. And during the White House meeting, Hillary continued to humiliate Foster mercilessly. This is according to two former FBI agents. Quote, as one of them, Copeland, said, Hillary put him down really, really bad in a pretty good-sized meeting. She told him he didn't get the picture, and he would always be, oh, shit. This doesn't sound like her. He would always be a little Hicktown lawyer who was obviously not ready for the big time. By the way, the show Veep is on back again for its seventh season. The season premiere was last weekend, 10 days ago. And it's clearly heavily inspired by the former First Lady. Indeed, Hillary went so far as to blame Foster for all the Clintons' problems. Yeah, that sounds about right. And to accuse him of failing them. According to Clemente and the other FBI investigator, who was assigned by the FBI to do the Starr investigation and who probed the circumstances surrounding Foster's suicide. As he put it, Foster was profoundly depressed, but Hillary lambasting him was the final straw because she publicly embarrassed him in front of others, said Clemente, who is speaking about the investigation now for the first time. She blamed him for failed nominations, claimed he had not vetted them properly, and said in front of his White House colleagues, you're not protecting us, you have failed us. After the meeting, his behavior changed dramatically, according to these FBI agents. Those who knew him said his voice sounded strained, he became withdrawn and preoccupied, and his sense of humor vanished. Yeah, Hillary has an effect on people. It's like a vampire. At times, he teared up, and he talked of feeling trapped. On Tuesday, July 13th, day after my birthday, 1993, while having dinner with his wife, Foster broke down and began to cry. What a bitch. He said he was considering resigning. Well, I guess he took that consideration into account. That weekend, him and his wife drove to the eastern shore of Merlin, where they saw their friends Michael Cardoza and Webster Hubble, and along with their wives, they played tennis, they swam, and they said he sat in a lawn chair, just kind of sat there. They said that just was not Vince. He loved to play tennis. He was always sociable, but he just sat over in the corner by himself and stared off into space, reading a book. Probably Final Exit, if I had any guess. 2 days later, he left the White House parking lot at 1:10 p.m. The precise time when he shot himself could not be pinpointed. After the park police found his body, they notified the Secret Service at 8:30 p.m. And based on what dozens of people who had contact with Foster after that meeting told the agents, while Foster was already depressed, the put-down that she gave him in that big meeting just pushed him over the edge. It was the final straw that broke the camel's back. No one can explain a suicide in rational terms, but the FBI investigation concluded that it was her vilification of Foster in front of other White House aides on top of his ongoing depression that triggered his suicide a week later. Star issued a 38,000-word report along with a separate psychologist report on the factors that contributed to his suicide, yet Star never mentioned the meeting with Hillary, leaving out the fact that his own investigation had found that her rage had led to her friend's suicide. Wow. I wonder how much the press is going to cover that here in the States. I'm sure a lot. I'm sure it's going to really make the headlines everywhere. And speaking of rage, it's been a long time coming. It's time for Night Rage. Now, for the first time ever in Nightshade history, we have an episode of Night Rage when I am not the rager. As some of you might know from my Twitter, I've gone down a rabbit hole of something called wet shaving, which is this whole thing where you shave with a badger brush, and it's a whole process. So there's a store, a company here in New York called New York Shaving Company. You probably haven't heard of it. And they have a line of products. And I went there because instead of buying samples, I can go to the store and smell all the different scents. They have a scent called Brooklyn. They have a scent called Elizabeth Street. They have a scent called Rose, which I thought would be cool. As I was there, the barber was just sitting on his barber chair, got up quickly, and he stood at my elbow, which I'm still angry. And as I'm smelling all the scents, there's only 8 of them, or 7. He's looking at my shoulder, and he's like, oh, this one is my favorite. I don't give a fuck. Of what possible use could it be if I'm smelling things, which one is it is that you favor? It'd be one thing if it's like dinner and the waiter's like, oh, this meal is really special, this entree. These are fragrances. It's completely subjective, dick. So what was funny is I was looking on Google to find the place. They have 2 locations. Someone had written a review, and it was really, really, really funny, and I'm going to share it with you. So this is about New York Shaving Company at 202B Elizabeth Street. Quote, not sure about this place, sat in the chair with 7 days of growth, thought, this is a nice way to spend a Sunday afternoon, a nice, relaxed shave. I didn't quite get what I was expecting. Hot towel, soap, lather, it all looked good. Then the main event, my Russian barber, well, that's your first mistake. When I was here's the night rage. Here it is. Where's the sound? Make the noise. I forgot about this. When I was in middle school, they call it that in the rest of the country, called junior high school here, my parents used to take me to this Russian barber on Brighton Beach. And how he would cut my hair, he would pull it really hard and cut. It was painful. The experience was painful. And I told my dad, it hurts when he cuts my hair. And this isn't just a second, this is an extended period of time. And my dad goes, oh, that's just how he cuts hair. Yeah, no fucking shit. That's not how everyone cuts hair. Maybe we could go to the barber who doesn't cause your son physical pain. Anyway, so my Russian barber started scraping away, working quietly and quickly. I would have preferred a little more foam and a far, far gentler touch. We are not a gentle people. I can assure you of that. Straight razor shaving, I've discovered, is for real men, and I'm not up to the requisite manliness levels. As he went through a few layers of skin on my neck, he seemed surprised that he'd scraped the neck that easily and asked me what I shaved with at home. A Gillette razor, I told him. Mach 3? Yes, that is good for you. I guess I can't handle a real man's shave. On it went, shaved down, up, scrape and scratch. It wasn't uncomfortable, but it sure as hell wasn't gentle. It ended, a hot towel, a soothing cold towel, and finally the astringent, which stung more than slightly, as he effectively stopped the slight spotting, like on your period. What do you say to a man who's just shaved you too closely? There was an awkward silence, so I thought I'd break the tension. Got a bit too close there. You have sensitive skin, he grumbled. Yes, in his eyes, I'm a woman. Well, that's just science. I walked out with the great scent of newly shaved man feeling clean and manly. Clint Eastwood probably felt like this in Hang 'Em High, clean shaven by a Bowie knife and the rope burn around his neck from the hanging gone bad. Finally, I can relate. Yeah, it's basically if someone scratches your neck, it's a lynching. I mean, let's come on. To be fair, however, if you shave at home with your Mach 3, you're going to get a decent, gentle shave. Straight razors are a new experience to one's skin. On the other hand, they shouldn't be so much rougher than one is used to. When I got home, my girlfriend, I'm assuming her name is Jeff, looked at me and asked why my neck was red. She looked closely and then said, looks painful, but you smell nice. Pros? Nice ambiance, polite, decent conversation. Cons, a bit rough, sore skin, diminished sense of manhood. This sounds like a review of a rape. I'll keep looking for my relaxing Sunday afternoon shave.
I heard he did it for power.
Yeah, it wasn't about sex. It was about power.
It wasn't about shaving. It
that's
was
how
about power.
When Russians shave, we do it about power. That's I can confirm. That is 100% true. Now, we have another video here, which is not from a courtroom scene. It's from Congress. Don't let the gavel confuse you. This is Maxine Waters at the best I've ever seen her. She's going against Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. And it really, if you had made a social justice warrior video where the older, educated, high-quality human being, black woman, who's not getting the respect she deserves despite having paid her dues, is being berated and talked down to by the uppity air wasp dick. This was what this looks like something out of an 80s movie, and I could not even believe it. So let's play this clip.
Mr. Secretary, I want you to know that no other secretary has ever told us the day before that they were going to limit their time in the way that you're doing. So if you want to use them as examples, you have acted differently than they have acted. And as I have said, if you wish to leave, you may.
If you'd wish to keep me here so that I don't have my important meeting continue to grill me.
He's talking to the head of a congressional committee and he's saying, you want to keep me here? I've got important meetings, lady. What the fuck? This is the head of the banking committee. Are you kidding me? This guy has Alexander Hamilton's job? Oof. Okay, go ahead.
Then we can do that. I will cancel my meeting and I will not be back here. I will be very clear if that's the way you'd like to have this relationship.
Thank you. The gentleman, the secretary, has agreed to stay to hear all of the rest of the members.
Okay,
please
so just
cancel
let's
your
be
meeting
to the press.
And I'm respect our time.
I am
who is next on the list?
My foreign meeting. You're instructing me to stay here and I should cancel.
No, you just made me an offer.
No, I didn't make you an
you
offer.
You made me an offer that I accepted.
I did not make
well,
you an offer. Just let's be clear.
Well,
you're instructing me. You are ordering me to stay here.
No, I'm not ordering you. I'm responding. Okay. I said you may leave anytime you want. And you said, okay, if that's what you want to do, I'll cancel my appointment and I'll stay here. So I'm responding to your request. If that's what you
that's
want to do.
That's not what I want to do. I told you.
What would you like to do?
What I've told you is I thought it was respectful that you'd let me leave at 5:15.
You are free to leave anytime you want.
Yeah. Hold on. It's respectful. You don't get to tell her what's respectful. This is oversight. What the fuck? I remember not that long ago, Alexander Hamilton, that committee or his predecessor, said, you are stealing from the government. And he audited the entire federal government's budget in like 2 weeks. The idea that she has to be respectful to him and she's respectful of what? She's just saying, hey, we need you here. We got questions. Well, you want me to cancel my important meeting? Yeah, you're the Secretary of the Treasury. Everyone's in fucking important. If Candace Owens can make time, the Ayn Rand of our generation, so can you. Let's go ahead with this.
You may
okay,
go.
Well then,
anytime
please,
you want.
Please dismiss everybody. I believe you're supposed to take the gravel and
the gravel.
Please
purple.
Do not
hold
instruct
on.
Me as.
Take the gravel. This is like okay. Leave her picture up because I like that shot of her, and look at the lady behind her. You know, let me give you guys a bit of advice, and I've gotten to this argument on Twitter a lot. Sarcasm plays very, very badly. Because if someone is to whom you're speaking is stupid, you shouldn't have to adjust your tone to demonstrate it. You can just quote their words accurately, or you can break down what they're saying and make it clearer. And the data, it's the difference between, like in a book, showing versus telling. If I'm being sarcastic, I'm telling you you're stupid, and you're not going to hear it. If I put out the contradictions, I'm showing you you're stupid, and not only showing you, I'm showing everyone around you, and that's being owned. Hashtag. So for him to talk down to her, first of all, is pretty nuts. Even when Candace Owens yesterday was talking about Ted Lieu and Gerald Nadler, she wasn't being sarcastic. She goes, "I resent what you're saying. You cropped the video. You're accusing me of certain things. That's disingenuous." These are all facts. Everything she said. Or her perspective. For him to be like, here's what you do. You grab your gravel. Fuck, dude. Even if he had said it correctly, you look like an ass.
I just want to point out that I did call it a gavel, so I have a one-up on this guy who's in court.
Steve Mnuchin, yeah. The Secretary of the Treasury. I if any of you have read Ego and Hubris, I do like sticking it to the authority and being snide to them in an effective way. Take your gravel is not that. Oof, play some more of this.
Mr. High, I'm to conduct this committee. Please, gentle lady, the time belongs to the chair.
Jesus fucking Christ. What an asshole. And I mean, they were all over her on left-wing Twitter, and I do not blame them one single bit. And she held herself. I mean, this is someone who freaks out all the time. We've seen a lot of her in rallies yelling about how she's going to impeach 4-5. And she was the model of decorum. Don't tell me how to run my committee. Yeah, that's very fair. Speaking of ancient animals, we've got some good science news. So there's a ginger-colored foal, it's a baby horse to you and me, died when it was just 1 or 2 weeks old around 42,000 years ago during the last Stone Age. But the body, let's throw out the picture, has been perfectly preserved in near-perfect condition in Siberian permafrost. And now, scientists are optimistic that they will obtain enough genetic material to clone the animal and bring the extinct species back to life. This is a joint Russian-South Korean research team led by South Korean cloning expert Professor Wang Woo-suk, who is also closely involved in efforts to revive the woolly mammoth using cells taken from features preserved in the Siberian ice. The foal is an example of the cold-resistant Lenskaya breed, which died out some 4,000 years ago. Researchers, or 40,000, whatever. Researchers are confident of the success of this project. This is from a station in Yakutsk, which is the world's coldest city, which is hosting this work. The attempts will continue until the end of April. That's this month. Work is so advanced that the team is already selecting a surrogate mother for the ancient horse. Now, the Russian researcher said there are 7 researchers involved in the project on the Korean side, and everyone is positive about the outcome. She said that once successfully cloned, the embryo will be implanted in a Korean horse. She said the Korean horse will fit in perfectly. They've been used in cloning for a while, and technology is mastered to perfection. Besides, the Korean horse is quite ancient, too. It is a successor of the Mongolian horse. So the first time we have this de-extinction happening, I don't think they've done it yet with anything. Passenger pigeon would be a low-hanging fruit because we know we have got good quality DNA because there's a few stuffed ones floating around. That's going to be really, really exciting stuff. And it'll be human beings basically playing God, as we were all meant to do. And now, most interestingly, someone else, one of the worst people in Washington, Eric Swalwell, has declared his candidacy for president. Before we get to this video, What's Hanlon's razor? I don't know. What I want you all to remember is, because a lot of people are like, oh, why is this guy running? Why is that guy running? A lot of people don't run for president to run for president. They run for president to get book deals. They run for president to get attention. They run for president, you know, so they can run for senator later or to be in the cabinet. It's all upside, even if you lose. It's just a great credential. Like, hey, in terms of stature, there's 435 congressmen. Now you can say, hey, I ran for president. It's really a smart career move if you have any kind of platform at all. And you never know when lightning might strike. Hopefully it'll strike a lot. Let's play this clip from him and on the Colbert Report, which is a nonpartisan comedy show, which has nothing to do with pushing forth a hard left ideology.
You've been very critical of Donald Trump, as you have been tonight. But in the past, you've called him a wrecking ball. You called him a Russian agent. You're a congressman.
Wait, pause this.
What can you do?
Go back. Can we pull it back to the two of them? Look at this. Stephen Colbert is the host of a comedy show. Eric Swalwell is here to announce his campaign for president. Colbert is in a tie. Man of the people, Eric Swalwell, is not in a tie. He's just like you and me, people. He's just like you and me. Holy shit. Go ahead.
What can you do to try to fix what you see as wrong with this country?
I've already done a lot, but I can do more. I've been in Congress for 6 years. I've defended our country from the Intelligence Committee while democracy's been on the ropes. I took a group of young members of Congress, started a group called Future Forum. We've gone all over the country to listen to.
How can you fix this country? Well, I took a bunch of congressmen all over America, and we listened to people. Any questions? I mean, if there's one thing presidents need to be able to do, it's to travel in groups and listen. That's really what presidenting is all about. That and getting stuck in a bathtub. Go ahead.
And stand up for the next generation of Americans. And I see a country in quicksand, unable to solve problems and threats from abroad, unable to make life better for people here at home. Nothing gets done. I talk to teachers and truckers.
Wait, hold on. Doesn't resistance mean you don't get shit done? Doesn't resistance mean that this evil president is trying to put forth his agenda and you're resisting and nothing's going to get done? What is he talking about? You want things to get done? You want Trump to get things done? Okay. Sounds great. Great endorsement of the president. Go ahead. Good Lord.
You know, nurses. And they feel like they're just running in place and it's not adding up to anything. I talk to people who are just like me, who are the first in their family to go to college. They've got a lot of student debt, can't buy a home, can't start a business. I talk to kids who sit in their classroom afraid that they'll be the next victim of gun violence. And they see Washington doing nothing.
Hey, kids, we got a congressman coming to talk to class today. Oh, God, all right. Because, you know, when you're in kindergarten, fifth grade, you know who your congressman is, and you're very, very invested. Hey, little 10-year-old boy, what are you concerned about? I'm scared of gun violence in our schools and climate change. Well, I can assure you that I and a group of other congressmen are touring America listening. So you are welcome. Wait, does that mean they're not going to shoot me? Washington's not getting things done. So they are going to shoot me? It's not looking good, kid. But I'll be in the White House with Secret Service. Go ahead, play this idiot.
Think about it after the moments of silence, and they see lawmakers who love their guns more than they love our kids. And none of that is going to change until we get a leader.
Okay, stop this. This fucker, oh, look at that. Bell's. Can you screen cap this for next time we talk about him? This Bell's palsy face. For those who don't remember Alex Swalwell, he's the one who was telling all the Second Amendment people, hey, why are you taking that down? That's the best shot. There we go. He's the one who said, hey, if you guys think, you gun people, that you're going to take on the federal government, may I remind you, we are the ones who got the nukes. And I'm like, and me and many other people are like, you're threatening to nuke America. Blithely. And I had a phone call today by somebody named Chris DeRose. He's a historian. And there's something that I didn't know existed called the Battle of Athens. If you don't know about it, you might want to goggle it. Briefly, What happened was there was a corrupt government in Athens, some city. I don't remember if it was Georgia or Kentucky or Tennessee. And these veterans who had just come back from World War II took their guns and overthrew the local government. This happened 7 years ago. You know what? They had nukes then, too. No one got nuked. It's an awesome, interesting story. So, oh, God, look at that face. What a sociopath. The thing is, it would be better if these sociopaths were smart. Go ahead.
To go big on the issues we take on, be bold in the solutions we offer, and do good in the way that we govern. I'm ready to solve these problems. I'm running for president of the United States.
Hey, hold on. Wait, what, this? Okay, how are you going to solve these problems? We're in quicksand, where we're going to be big and bold. What does that mean? Diarrhea? Like, what does that even mean? The bullet point is so fucking corporate. Does this resonate with regular people? Even if it does, how are you going to distinguish yourself from the 15 others? You think they're going to be like, big and bold? That's not me. I prefer a campaign that has small ideas and is subdued about implementing the marginal change we need in Trump's America. That's how I'm going to get the nomination. Who is advising this? What was that? Okay. I'm getting hand signals. Who is advising these people? And they're, you know what? These advisors are making bank. They're making good money on hourly. Was that the end of the clip? Okay, let's play more of this. Thank you.
It's official.
Thank you. It's official.
Now it's official.
Boy, did it feel good to say that.
Now it's official.
Yeah.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It is amazing to me that, you know, it used to be, I can't imagine someone going on Johnny Carson to announce their campaign for presidency, because it would be looked at as so silly and beneath you, and be like, this candidacy is clearly a joke. Now, it was a big moment when Bill Clinton went on Arsenio Hall, but that wasn't to make probably the most important declaration of his life. This was for him to reach Arsenio's audience, just like when Donald Trump, as candidate, called into Alex Jones to reach his audience. This is campaigning. It's not the same as making this big declaration. And what's interesting is, like, you don't – him and Kirsten Gillibrand, all these people, you have no idea where these people are from. I don't off the top of my head, is he from California, I think? Can you look at – you don't have to – I love it. I asked Drew, is he from California? Drew's like, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, that's why there's the computer there. But they just go on this show. And, like, interchangeable. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm going to be great. I'm going to run for president. He didn't even talk about, like, one specific issue that he's good on. It's like, I've been in Congress for 6 years. Okay. Elizabeth Warren's got – she's been in the Senate for, like, what? Like, 8 or something? Six? I don't know. Where's he from? California?
He's from California.
Yeah, yeah. He's from some district in California.
He was born in Iowa.
So he has no roots in New York. Why isn't he on Jimmy Fallon? Why isn't he on any of these other shows? He's got to be in New York on Stephen Colbert. I tweeted this out and I got some heat, and I'm very proud of it. Stephen Colbert has gone from a parody of a conservative to a parody of a progressive. The idea that you can go on late night television and give Hitler salutes and it's ironic and no one is going to bat an eye is insane. And yet here we are. That bottom third is accurate. We're still waiting to hear from Biden. If he's going to announce, we're still waiting to hear from Stacey Abrams. There's an outside shot she's going to announce. And there's like two or three other Congress people who are nobodies. But it looks like the field is set. The debates are not that long ago. This guy is going to get his clock cleaned. This is like, what's his name? The Minnesota governor, Tim Pawlenty. There's no there. There's no soul there. Just awful, awful idiot. Anyway, tomorrow is going to be the last Nightshade for a week. Next week, Compound Media is off. There's not going to be any pre-tapes. It's going to be very, very sad. And tonight at midnight, in a few minutes, the episode of me and Titania McGrath from You're Welcome will be on YouTube. So I will see you all tomorrow. And until then, sweet dreams.
I hope they don't have diabetes.